and welcome to episode 121 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundeslav, and with me, as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler. Welcome to the show. Pull the string.
I'm glad that you can make that reference now. Also, it's been a long time since we podcasted, and so we're being extra dramatic.
Dear listeners.
Hello. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Let us begin.
Oh, right. I thought you meant me.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I assume you're probably lying on a couch.
No, I'm actually unwrapping UVs.
Oh.
At a kitchen table.
Oh.
Sipping Wegmans' own brand.
Wegmans. I've never been to Wegmans.
And I also have an oatmeal cream pie, which is possibly the worst thing you can put in your body.
Yeah.
Here the individually packed. That probably just ruined everyone's speakers.
Gee, Ben, oatmeal cream pies don't sound very Australian. Could it be that you're not, in fact, in Australia?
No, it's just that the empire/capitalist regime of the United States is also taking over all products and commodities of Australia as well.
Oh, hush. You're in upstate New York.
I sure am. It's snowy outside. That's unusual.
Yeah, it's, the snow has pretty much all melted here in New York City, but it's more or less, some of it is still on the ground. You know, things don't change much. The dog man is still barking. These things.
And howling, I
guess. Howling.
I think he's just lonely. He's the only one.
He might be. Anyway, how have you been? You came to the U.S. So
yeah, I've been very, very busy, but I'm here now.
Good. You spent some time down here.
I did.
And now
we didn't really do much.
No.
Of like we went to the Museum of Modern Art and we didn't really do much of great consequence. But I was very weary and was just happy to just not. You know, be in a different place.
Yeah, same. I didn't feel like it was necessary to go around and do all sorts of... You've done most of the touristy things in New York City already.
Well, I guess there's other stuff that I want to do, but I want to be enthusiastic about doing them when I find...
Yeah.
And not just, like, grudgingly... You know, I can't think of anything more miserable than, like, be grudgingly going on a mass tour to see something and not appreciating it fully.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Speaking of begrudgingly and things that are not wonderful, you are going to GDC.
I am.
As am I. But this is going to be your first time at GDC after having heard me describe it on this very podcast several times and saying things such as, man, why would you do that? Get a life. Now you are yourself...
Now I am... finds myself without a life.
Yeah, now you are going to experience the magic ? Of GDC.
It's an interesting era that I find myself going to GDC.
Yes.
In that Unavowed got nominated for, I think it was the narrative IGF Award. You know more about this stuff than
yes,
I do.
Yes, I believe it is narrative. It's nominated for the Excellence in Narrative IGF Award.
Right. So this has been something of a dream of Dave's. And he said to me, would you come to the awards dinner? I know nothing about conferences or dinners or awards or anything like that. And was planning
Wait a minute. That is you've told a huge fib in your statement. You know nothing about dinners?
Oh, I know about, I mean, event dinners.
Oh, okay.
For games.
Okay.
I love dinners.
I cook dinners
regularly and eat them a lot.
Exactly.
But.
Anyway, yes.
So I mistakenly thought that this was a New York event, and I was sort of planning to be here around that time.
Right.
You know, and so I said, oh, sure, you know, I'm probably going to be in there. I'll see if I can make it. And so, went off to, you know, doing stuff and organizing music events and doing all that sort of stuff. And then Dave was like, oh, I got you a GDC pass that comes with the nomination. And so I'm like, I better look up this thing. And I realized that It's actually a GDC night.
Yes.
That's in San Francisco, which is on the other side of the country.
Yes.
To where I was planning to be.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, well, I'm going to GDC now. So it was all my ignorance is obviously my own fault.
This seems like it's like a wacky sitcom comedy of errors plot.
My life.
Well, you know, whatever. But I mean, it's exciting because, you know, you'll get to experience it firsthand. And
you, I think you have been far more excited about me coming to GDC than I have been. Mostly because I haven't had the mental capacity to be excited about it.
Well, I mean, this is going to be my 8th GDC. And so, you know, I mean, I always enjoy it, but it's always more enjoyable when there's something new added to the mix, whether it's, you know, attending a new party or going as a speaker or something like that. And this time around, you going there, like last year I had a lot of fun because I knew a lot of people that were going for their first time, and so it was kind of fun to, including friend of the podcast, Jacob Janerka. He's not listening. He's too busy working on his own game. So yeah, it's cool to like sort of in a way live vicariously through people that are going for the first time, but it's doubly so fun through you because of your, you know, sort of opinions.
Well, it's interesting to me. It's interesting to me that I have heard you talk about GDC at great length for about 8 years now.
Yeah.
I still have no idea what GDC is.
I mean, it's a conference.
Right, and my experience with conferences was through banking, and was...
Right.
I enjoyed the conference, but at the same time, I couldn't help that everything we talked about and discussed and, air quotes, learned at the conference, when you returned to the regular world of doing mortgages... Why did I pronounce the T in mortgages?
Because you're in America now, boy.
I see. I overpronounced my consonants. Was that none of that really held any sway, and that the conference felt like an attempt by the executives of the branch to get us to make more money for the shareholders.
Welcome to GDC.
Interesting. But yeah, so, I mean...
Anyway, yeah.
I won't say that conferences weren't educational, but the education that I learned from banking conferences was somewhere within the realms of fantasy. Like,
yeah.
In the best case scenario, this could work, and you'd make shareholders a lot of money. But when you're trying to help, you know, Bob and Karen set their mortgage up and do the best things by Bob and Karen, what you learned at the conference would not help them in their particular situation. So I'm, you know,
immediately I think
a little suspicious of conferences.
I get it. I think GDC is a little different because obviously there's a lot of talks that are geared towards education and, under, you know, telling people what they do or what people did in games to kind of like help you. It doesn't feel like, I think, really a swindle or any sort of thing like that.
Sure, but I guess when I went to banking conferences, the conference was held by my employer.
Right.
So this isn't like going to the Wadget Eye.
Right. Exactly.
Or even like the Valve conference or anything
sure.
like that.
Sure.
This is, you know, it's a bit like, how can you make your games more marketable for Steam?
Right.
This
I mean, I'm sure there'll be talks like that, but yeah, no, it's very, there's definitely things that, you know, you can pick and choose what applies to you, and it's basically what you make out of it. I'm just mostly excited to be, like, you know, if we're in the same room and, like, Tim Schafer walks by, I'll be like, hey, look, it's Tim Schafer, and you'll just shrug and go, oh, okay. And that'll be funny.
Well, I'm currently wearing my Polecats t-shirt.
Of course.
But I don't think that seeing Tim Schafer in a room would fill me with any, like...
I don't expect it to. I just think it would be funny to, like... We've been doing this podcast for years and talking about all of these people and, like, to actually finally get around and, like, you know, be in the same room as some of them, I think will be some level of novelty.
I know what you want.
I want Charles Cecil to be in the room with
I know.
Us.
And
yes.
You want me to tell him that he's an embarrassed crocodile.
Crocodile. Yeah, and I want to tell him that my name is actually Francisco, but I understand that it's easier to call me Francesco.
I want to welcome him to the fine and apparently rainy city of San Francisco.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna open my oatmeal cream pie. Please forgive the noise you're about to hear.
Okay. But we will talk much more at length about this in a future podcast when we have both returned from GDC and you have...
Not yet. I have something more to say.
Oh, okay.
That ties in with our current topic.
Okay.
And you'll forgive me for eating oatmeal cream pie.
No,
I won't. I say this. And if you don't know what an oatmeal cream pie is, people listening to the podcast, look it up, because...
Let me do...
It does not... It is not a pie in any sense of the word.
Let me also put in the caveat that if you don't know what it is and you Google it, please make sure that you include the word oatmeal and not just cream pie, because...
Oh my god, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think you spell cream correctly. Isn't it the...
No. Oh, well, I guess if you spell oatmeal cream pie C-R-E-M-E, then that's fine.
Yeah, I don't know how Ho-Ho, like Little Debbie or whoever it is.
Ho-Ho.
Well, Ho-Ho's is a product.
Yeah.
Fine product, I admire.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, so I want to say this.
Yeah.
And it ties in with our current topic. Or
we haven't even said what our today's topic is.
I know,
is,
but that's
ahead.
Fine. You can use this as one of your segue things, but I'm going to say it, and then you can do the segue.
Okay.
It's absolutely unfortunate that I'm going to GDC now. I nearly said Grand Theft Auto, but that's GTA. It's incredibly unfortunate that I'm going to GDC now, of all times. This is possibly the worst time for me to go to GDC, because what I'm currently learning, I am somewhat a beginner in, mm-hmm. and therefore not advanced enough to really gain any technical information on a level that I can use from GDC about my current work.
Well, I would say, I mean, there's definitely different levels of expertise that the talks are geared towards. Like, there's talks that are geared towards experts and beginners. It's not like every single talk is like, oh, you've been working in 3D for years. Here's a talk. Because obviously, if they're educational, they're going to assume that there's some people out there that have no idea what's happening, you know?
Like me. But yeah, all of the GDC stuff that I've seen geared towards 3D graphics was so far beyond my level that it's comical.
Right.
Genuinely comical how much more advanced the GDC talks were than what I can even, you know, I can't use that stuff.
Well.
So I'm curious to see, whereas, like, you know, if I was doing 3D, 2D stuff, well, no, I am doing 2D stuff, but the 2D stuff I'm doing, again, now, is different to 2D stuff I've ever done. So I feel like being an absolute beginner, not an absolute beginner, obviously I retain some of the concepts and things like that, but my skill level is so far down low now that I feel like I am kind of going in with like the expectation that I will see some people doing some really cool stuff that is so far out of my capabilities and out of like our team sizes and out of our budget and technology capabilities, that I'll just be like, well, that's really cool and I can't do it.
Right.
So anyway, but I'm being pessimistic, as I tend to be about this.
Oh, sure.
Stuff.
Me too.
But anyway, so let's talk about today's topic. That's our segue.
Yeah.
Have at it.
All right. Well, Gareth. Our topic was actually sent to me this morning by our dear colleague in podcastery, a member of the Backseat Designers, Dr. Professor Gareth Millward.
Do they actually design just backseats? Is that the only thing that they design?
I believe they refer to it in the sense of they don't actually design games, but they have opinions on what game design should be. And much
that doesn't
like
make sense. Don't they design games now?
No. Well, I guess that would probably explain why they haven't done a podcast in a while, because they're now... Yeah. Anyway.
It's okay to be a hypocrite, but I prefer it when it's just me being one.
Yeah.
And not one else.
Yeah, same. So Gareth sent a topic request today because
Thanks,
he was...
Gareth.
Yes, thank you. He very kindly was sending me some nice words about the reveal of my new project that I posted on Twitter a couple of days ago. My Western game, Rosewater, which now I can talk about freely and I don't have to call the Scottish game or be coy or bleep out or anything. Sorry, sorry, David Lloyd. He was looking forward to me having to edit that, but unfortunately that's not the case for him. Anyway, he said... I love how the increase in skill and the availability of the technology is taking adventure games away from, quote, needing to be in, quote, low res, And he has a question, which is, do you and Ben feel like you're able to do the types of games you want to do, rather than being limited by lack of experience or lack of available technology?
Mm.
No. Thank you for listening.
Wow. This oatmeal cream pie has an interesting blend of spices.
There's spices in an oatmeal cream pie?
Sorted. Well, there may be artificial flavors, but it tastes like they've put some spices in it.
Odd, but okay. I don't think that there's any natural herbs or spices in an oatmeal cream pie. Just saying, you might want to check the ingredients list.
I can go while you start talking.
I was going to let you take the lead on this one.
Interesting. I'm just opening the cupboard now.
Okay. This is now the ASMR podcast. Ben yeah. is now opening the cupboard.
You have to play it up enough.
Please. I will take care of you. Here are some coins. 5, 6.
Please don't do accents.
Okay. Sorry. Please no hit, Mr. Chandler.
anyway. There's a lot of ingredients in here. A lot. But there is turmeric.
Oh,
for color.
Well then.
Mm. That's one of the very few ingredients in this that I recognize.
And that is probably a natural and not chemical ingredient.
There you go. It actually says spices, but it doesn't specify which ones. But it tastes very similar to what Americans call pumpkin spice, which...
Okay. It's basically just cinnamon.
Yeah. Oh, no. There's more than pumpkin spice than cinnamon. Anyway. So, I'm going to say straight up, no. I do not feel that I have the skills and abilities to make the games I want to make.
Okay.
I feel that should be fairly obvious by the fact that I'm learning 3D after doing 2D for a very long time. I also want to say, I feel like I have a very broad range of taste in games. As I feel you do.
Yeah.
Mine are perhaps broader, but we both have fairly broad tastes. When we relax after making graphics or code or whatever for adventure games all day, we don't just play adventure games.
Right.
You know, you like Assassin's Creed. You like God of War.
Uh-huh.
You like XCOM.
Yes.
You like a wide range of things.
Yes.
And when I was growing up, I would play, and I know that you're exactly the same, cover discs of magazines that had different...
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was, so, you know, you would have the racing game demo, you'd have the shooter demo, you'd have the real-time strategy demo.
Uh-huh.
And I played everything because you'd play a demo for an hour.
Exactly.
And all the times that, you'd have exhausted the potential of the demo.
Yeah.
So you'd be like, oh, well, what else is on this cover disc?
Right.
That was cool, or I didn't like that. What's next? You weren't playing them to try them to buy them because you didn't have money.
Right, exactly. Or if you did, you saved up that money for the one game that you really did want to buy.
Right, and in your case in the 90s, it was either console games or
adventure games, yes.
Mine was never adventure games.
Okay.
Ever. I never spent money on an adventure game until way later. Anytime I got an adventure game, you know, my brother's friend in high school let me borrow Sam & Max.
Right.
See,
I played a demo of Sam & Max on a cover disc of CD-ROM today, and I thought it was great. And I played that demo so many times, even though it was just the same small bit of the demo. It was the first three rooms, and the demo ended when they got into the DeSoto and drove away.
I mean, I played the demo for Beavis and Butthead
in
Stupidity over and over again, laughed all the jokes, knew all the lines.
Yep.
You know I know all the lines. I know you know all the lines to Sam & Max. It's like... But I never bought that game until years later.
Oh.
We'll
see. I bought it pretty contemporary to when I played the demo.
Right. Whereas I was more interested in Command & Conquer and...
You know, there's
Unreal.
Sorry to go off on another tangent, but there is a classic games post-mortem at GDC of the original Command & Conquer done by Lewis Castle, which you might be interested in.
That is interesting. Mm. I love Command & Conquer. Mm. So my dream of games, when I very first wanted to make a game, you wanted to make point-and-click adventures first off, right?
Yes.
I did not. I wanted to make a real-time strategy game.
Okay.
That was my dream. And I wanted to make...
So did Chris Jones, amusingly enough.
Mm.
Chris Jones actually made a little RTS demo. But not an AGS, obviously.
Right. But yeah, so I I wanted to make a real-time strategy game. I wanted to make a first-person shooter game. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing around in Unreal Editor, trying to put, like, levels together. I wanted to make a role-playing game. I remember playing around with, like, the Arcanum map editor that they said was the editor that they used to make the levels in Arcanum, which is clearly a lie because it's you know, toothless and underpowered. I came to making adventure games because I played Rob Blank 1.
Mm-hmm. As most of us probably did.
And I saw the graphics and I'm like, oh, well, if a guy with this skill can make games, why can't I?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to check out this AGS thing. I downloaded AGS. It was incredibly simple to make a game.
On a side note, I wonder if Yahtzee enjoys or resents the idea that most people probably thought, man, if this game can get made and this looks like this, I can do it too.
I don't think Yahtzee...
I don't think he cares.
Needs to care.
He's moved on to other things.
I don't think Yahtzee... I don't think he needs to care what anybody says about his work. I think he's done enough. He's, you know, no one can deny that he's turned tinkering with AGS into a pretty good thing.
Sure.
But yeah, so, you know, I thought, oh, well, that would be cool. And then I was like, well, wouldn't doing games for money be cool?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, work towards that, and now I'm doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But my dream was never like, oh, I want to make Monkey Island. And even if anybody that played, like, the games that I made back then will know that I never made, like, a fan game of adventure games.
Right.
My games just didn't play like that because I don't particularly enjoy
adventure
those
games.
Well, you know, here's the thing. And I've put this, and I'm not trying to be confrontational, which is rare for me, but you know, give me some benefit of the doubt, please.
Uh-huh.
I played Mage's Initiation recently,
mm-hmm.
and completed it and enjoyed it. I thought, you know, that was a really well-made game. I enjoyed it. I would never wanted to make a game like that, ever.
Right.
And I was sort of talking to Dave about, you know, just like the changes that we're going through, or like not the changes but things that we're trying, because we don't know if this is permanent or if this is the way of the future or anything like that. We're just trying something. And I said to him, you know, we were talking about design and stuff like that, and I said to him, name a game, an adventure game, that you love unreservedly, that's like in serious tone, like, you know, not like Day of the Tentacle or Monkey Island, because I think those games, I feel like Day of the Tentacle and Monkey Island both hold up pretty well.
Yeah, sure.
But I said to him, you know, that's in the tone that you like, that you want to make. Name one that you love unreservedly, as I love Command & Conquer or Doom unreservedly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the answer I got was silence, which is what I expect. I believe I've asked you the same thing, right?
Yeah. The only really serious tonal adventure game, like, not... And I don't even mean serious as in, like, what I want to make, is The Dig. And I like The Dig, but I don't love it
Well, what about Gabriel Knight 1?
Oh, yeah, sure, okay.
What about
Broken
Sword
1? Broken Sword 1 is an odd one because it's mostly serious, but it's also got a lot of... It's not an outright slapstick comedy adventure, but I would hesitate to call it a purely serious...
Well, that's being a bit limiting.
But, yeah, okay.
That's saying that drama's kind of funny bits, which is... We both know that's not
true. No, I know, that's very true. But, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, Broken Sword. I see.
Anyway, but, yeah, so, like... So, to me, if I was... You know, and I played Dusk earlier this year. Friend of the podcast, Anatoly, gifted me a copy of Dust.
Mm-hmm.
Dusk, I meant. And I went... Oh man, I wish that I'd made a first-person shooter like this.
Because
It's great. It's like, it's the, you know, that's one of the things that I've wanted to do, is make a first-person shooter that does the stuff that I like from the 1990s without the stuff that I don't like from the 1990s.
Right.
Dusk basically did that. You know, and I was talking to a few people about first-person shooters and kind of just said, oh, Dusk is probably the greatest first-person shooter I've ever played. Because of exactly that reason, it did the thing that I wanted to do, which is, you know, throw back to the 90s without the trappings that make it annoying.
Right.
You know? And I feel like that's kind of what you and Dave try and design your adventure games like.
Mm-hmm.
A throwback to the 90s without the bits that made them annoying.
Well,
you know, the game...
As much as, you know, adventure games had their heyday in the 90s, and so that's what people associate them with. But it's not like, hey, remember the 90s? Because I know that Dave gets very, very annoyed
when people say,
it's a throwback, or it's retro, or it's a love letter, or whatever. And I don't like it. I don't get as annoyed, but I don't particularly like that comparison too much either.
Well, I feel like I was fair when I said you don't get to complain too much when you made a game that literally looks exactly like Gabriel Knight on purpose.
Well, and I owned up to it. It's not like I was denying it. That would be stupid.
You can't deny it, but like... What you're trying to do is go, imagine if Gabriel Knight was good.
Right.
Which is probably, that is an awful thing to say, and I'm not trying to be inflammatory to fans of Gabriel Knight. You're absolutely justified in liking it. But you personally have issues with Gabriel Knight 1, right?
Of course.
So you're trying to design to avoid those issues, right? Which I think you're entitled to do and is fair to do.
But at the same time, like, when I made Lamplight City... I took the aesthetic of Gabriel Knight 1, and I was like, hey, this is a cool aesthetic. I wasn't trying to reinvent the wheel and be like, hey, I'm going to make my own version of Gabriel Knight. Because if I had made my own version of Gabriel Knight, I would have done something very different. I would not have done a Victorian detective game divided into other cases.
New Orleans, Graveyard, and Voodoo.
That's a very, very, very minimal part of the game as a whole. Like, there's definitely that. But, you know, it's not like Gabriel Knight doesn't have a monopoly on New Orleans or Voodoo or...
No, absolutely not.
Graveyards, I mean...
No, but what I'm very awkwardly and trying to say and probably failing to do so is that...
It's okay to fail.
You're trying to... I know, I've taken inspiration from your career. Is that you're trying to recapture the essence of what an adventure game could be to you back then, but make something greater or more in line with what you want without being like, oh, I have to make... Like, Mage's Initiation, when I play it, I think, oh, this is Quest for Glory.
Right.
It
wasn't my intent... I think it's slightly different, because, I mean, the creators of Mage's Initiation obviously were paying homage to Quest for Glory, like, through the mechanics and through the whole just kind of feeling and atmosphere of the game. And, I lifted the aesthetic of the first Gabriel Knight and, to an extent, the atmosphere, but I also wanted to create my own thing. So, I wanted to have a jumping-off point. I didn't want people to see it and go... Oh man, there was definitely an element of, oh, you know, if you liked Gabriel Knight, maybe check this out because it's, you know, I'm a fan and I'm obviously inspired by it. But I wasn't trying to be like, you know, oh, this is a Gabriel Knight like, and
no, I wasn't trying to suggest
I already did that with Ben Jordan, so
yeah, I wasn't trying to suggest that, but you're obviously,
and I don't mean this as to be like, I'm not trying to like stand on a, I'm not trying to be on the defensive and defend my choices. I just, yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, like, I'm not trying to say that you and Dave are doing, oh, what if Gabriel Knight was good? I've probably have, you know, not summed this up very well. But, like, for me, if I was going to make a game free of limitations,
mm-hmm.
my go-to would not be like, I want to make a game like Gabriel Knight, but good.
Right.
My go-to would be, you know,
basically what
else.
You're saying is you wouldn't make an adventure game.
Yeah, and the
which
reason
is what you
made...
said to begin with.
Right. The reason, but I'm trying to explain why, and the reason why is that like I was using AGS for so long, is that it worked, and I felt limited by inexperience, and also I felt like the other engines at the time when I was learning AGS. Mostly we're good for making platform games. And I like platformers less than I like point-and-click adventure games.
Interesting.
I like platformers, but if I'm, like, going to sit down and relax with a game, a platformer's down on the list.
Okay.
You know, and I still relax and enjoy adventure games, but there's other games that I would choose first.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in this day and age, you're not a child in the 90s anymore. I feel like in this day and age, you're the same.
Yeah, I mean, I like platformers more than you do.
Yes, but I'm not talking about platformers. I'm saying that the reason I learned to make adventure games was because platformers was my other choice.
Right. I mean, I started off in click and play, which was a platformer maker, essentially.
And you never made a platformer?
Not that I released. But I did make some platformers.
How did you find the experience?
I mean, I enjoyed it. They weren't particularly complex or innovative or anything, but I thought it was cool that I was making a game.
Yeah, I mean, I made a platformer too, or a couple. Not like long ones, but just like there was a point where just experimenting with a form and having something to play was satisfying to me.
Exactly, yeah.
Same. That is no longer the case. Well. So yeah, but that's one of the reasons that I've begun learning 3D is because I can't make the games that I want to yet.
Okay.
You know, when I look at the things that inspire me lately, I'm not saying that I don't get inspired by adventure games or love adventure games, but I've made a lot of adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, possibly enough that I'm like, well, I could make something else now.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was designing adventure games, which I haven't done for a couple of years, I was trying to experiment with the form and like see what made it work. And I think some of that was trying to find a way to make the games I want to make without being limited by the trappings of a genre that I wasn't in love with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do very weird games with very strange titles, mostly as a way of escaping the trappings of the genre.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd love to make an action game or, you know, something else.
Okay.
I like AGS and I like working in this medium, and it's always fun to have enough experience within a medium to try and push to go, oh, how can I refine this? You know, and you get to the point where you're writing fairly detailed essays on the intricacies of 2D adventure game art.
Sure, as you've done.
As I've done. Because any, I guess, discipline can get more and more interesting the more and more you get into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make things forever. which I think is fair. And I said to Dave as well, this is something that's kind of been on my mind, is when you play Unavowed, you've got the dramatic voice acting,
mm-hmm.
and you've got the dramatic writing,
mm-hmm.
and you've got the dramatic music, and the gameplay is still banging items onto objects.
Well, sure, because it's an adventure game.
And the animation is still sprites bumping up against each other.
Right.
And I felt like we, or Dave in particular, was really, you know, fighting the confines of what AGS could do.
Right.
And, you know, we have, like, an epic boat chase thing. And I'm not saying an epic boat chase can't be done well in 2D. I'm saying it wasn't done well in Unavowed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could be better done. You know, and as I said to Dave, and he kind of dismissed it, but I feel like the point stands a little bit, is that three of the four companions in Unavowed are action game companions.
Right.
One of them's good at climbing and using a sword. Mm-hmm. One of them's good at, like, throwing fireballs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, you know, one of her things is, you know, having the connections to get information from the cops. But she, you know, uses a gun.
Right.
And I'm like, three of those characters are action game characters.
And if you want to boil it down even more to what you were saying, they're essentially just inventory items because it's use
right.
gun, use fireball, use sword on obstacle
right. and sort of thing. I'm not saying that they don't make satisfying puzzles or can't make satisfying puzzles.
No, of course, but ultimately it boils down to the same mechanic that we've been seeing
again and again. And I felt like Dave was not so much fighting against it, but like trying to push the limits of what AGS can do,
right.
or what we can do in AGS, and I felt like the game felt flat in those places.
Hmm.
So, you know, and Dave doesn't like enjoying...
Doesn't like enjoying... What is he, you?
Dave doesn't like designing puzzles.
Right.
He'll say that himself. Yeah. And I also feel like when we were talking about Unavowed, one of our go-to things was how great it felt to walk around the city areas,
mm-hmm.
the hub areas in Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
Right.
But Unavowed doesn't quite capture that as well as we might have hoped.
Yeah, I think one of the things, and I've thought about this a lot too, I think that sort of feeling that you get of traversal and exploration of a hub environment, like in a game such as Vampire the Masquerade, or even like Deus Ex, Human Revolution, or Assassin's Creed, yeah, that sort of thing. I think that it is much more difficult to pull that off effectively in 2D, because obviously you're pretty much limited to just the entire screen and a little character walking across the screen. It's basically, hey, here's an environment, now click, and your character, you have to wait while your character walks across the environment, whereas a third person over the shoulder camera, or even like, you know, a point and click 3D where the camera angle changes, not the entire thing is visible at once, and so you are discovering and exploring new areas and stuff like that. Whereas in 2D, yeah, it's just, unless it's like a super zoomed in or a scrolling background, but we all know how much, you know, how much of a pain in the ass scrolling backgrounds are.
Well, especially super zoomed in, because that just becomes a pain in the ass, because you're still watching, but you're clicking constantly.
Right.
Which blur.
Yeah, exactly. So that idea of traversal is much more suited, at least getting that feeling is much more suited to a 3D game than a 2D game.
I agree. And I feel like one of my
favorites... That's a first.
I know, I never thought I'd say that on our podcast. But I feel like that exploring an environment, when I played Deus Ex for the first time, it was this just amazing thing. And, you know, even playing build engine games when I was a kid and, like, walking around, you know, a movie theater, a cinema, as it were, and, like, just that sort of stuff was really inspiring and important to me, you know. And, like, I'm not saying it didn't happen in 2D. Definitely, like, when I was playing Wing Commander and, like, just clicking around the Tiger's Claw was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, like, the start of the 90s cool.
Right.
Whereas Deus Ex was the end of the 90s cool. And, like, it was a whole different thing. So trying to recapture that in 2D is difficult, because mm-hmm. you're trying to distill something down into its components. And one of the biggest components isn't in there, which is, oh, you can't see what's around the corner.
Right.
It's fun to find out what's around that corner or what's behind the hidden floor panel. You can do hidden floor panels in 2D, but it's different.
Yeah,
you're
sure.
Not jumping down into the thing directly yourself.
Like, yeah, I mean, you can do like you can do close-ups and stuff. Like in the Sherlock Holmes games, the Frogware Sherlock Holmes games, one of the things I've enjoyed in the more recent ones that I tried to capture a little bit in Lamplight City is that, you know, you'll be walking around as Sherlock in third person or first person if you want. I like doing it in third person just because that's my preference. But like if you get to a desk or something and you click on it, you'll get a close-up of the desk. And then there's several items on the desk that you can examine and you'll get close-ups of them and stuff like that. So like, yes. You know, it feels a little bit more interactive if you have this first-person view of something and you're able to open the drawers, even if it's just clicking on them. But like if the drawer opens and a document comes out of it or something and you're like, oh, what's this? It feels a lot more immersive and interactive than if you just had the wide shot view and it's, you know, you're searching through and
open,
like, oh,
drawer.
Here's
and
a thing.
Inventory, right. Item. You're like, all right, well, what can I use this inventory item on?
Right, exactly.
So yeah, the stuff that inspires me
mm-hmm.
in 2D adventure games is probably exploring an environment.
Mm-hmm.
I like that in Monkey Island. I like that in The Dig. That's one of the things in The Dig that I think still holds up, is just this cool world to explore. Even though exploring it becomes a chore and a bit of a pain,
mm-hmm.
you know, I like
well,
that.
I think backtracking through it is what becomes the chore and the pain.
Right.
But yeah. The initial exploration and that sense of discovery every time you get to a new spire and you're like, oh, I wonder what this one's going to be like. That's right. That's cool.
Yeah, so the stuff that inspires me translates pretty well to 3D or doesn't translate as well to 2D. And I also like I like having control over a character.
Right.
And I'll be honest, I like challenges beyond puzzles, which is a funny thing to say because I think I like puzzles more than any AGSer I know.
Yeah, Probably.
A lot of the AGSs that I know don't really like puzzles, or a lot of the adventure games fans that I know don't really like puzzles, and they don't like puzzles to be difficult. They like puzzles to take a backseat to dialogue and that sort of stuff. Whereas I genuinely like puzzles, and I'll, like, you know, play a purely puzzle game. I mean, you played The Witness, and you mostly just enjoyed solving those puzzles on your own, right?
Yeah, for the most part.
So, like, I think, like, everybody can get into puzzle games, or at least to some extent. But, yeah, it's weird to me that, like, as the guy that's, like, curious about pushing on from adventure games more than probably most other AGSs that I know, I'm the one that also likes puzzles more. But puzzles can be done well in action games, maybe better, I want to say. Not that I have any examples. I'm just, you know, spitballing here. But yeah, like,
so if I can rein this in a little bit, because I feel like
we've been getting carried away.
No, we've been talking about some interesting stuff, but I kind of feel like we've strayed from the topic a little bit, and I did have one particular question that I thought we could each talk about our own experiences with that I think ties in a little bit more to what Gareth asked us. So obviously on the next project we're working on, we're doing something that's completely different from a stylistic perspective, as well as just a medium perspective, I guess, for lack of a better term. Obviously, you're working on two projects kind of simultaneously. You're working on Technobabylon Birthright, which is a 3D game. So you're dipping your toe. Well, more than dipping your toe, you've pretty much done a cannonball into the pond at this point. You know, you're working in 3D, and you're also doing Nighthawks, which you're doing in 2D, but it's also a much higher resolution, which is 4K. So this is obviously a very large departure from other projects, well, every adventure game project that you've worked on thus far. And on Rosewater, I've doubled the resolution again from 640 by 400 to 1280 by 720. And so I'm doing a few different things, basically just working in higher resolution. But I'm also trying a couple of new things, like not doing portraits and, like, relying more on the body language and the expressions of the sprites and things like that to convey more emotion and try and get... So I'm trying to do something a little different. As far as what you said before about the whole, you know, this is just 2D characters banging against each other. Although that is probably more suited to a Leisure Suit Larry game. But, so could you maybe talk a little bit about how you're finding the experience of working in these new mediums? And, you know, obviously you're at a point now where you feel comfortable, or you at least feel like you have... I know that you've joked that, like, you have no idea what you're doing and stuff, and I think to an extent, I mean, it's a perfectly valid... way to feel, but at the same time you have to have some sort of confidence in yourself and the experience that you've amassed over the years to say, okay, yeah, I'm totally capable of doing this. So, like, what do you think has changed in, or, like, how do you feel like that you've gotten to this point based on what you've done in the past, I guess, is the question.
You mean, why am I doing this now?
Well, I mean, like, what have you learned recently that makes you able to do this now versus, like, say, 3 or 4 years ago?
Well, there's a couple of different aspects to it, and not all of it's to do with me.
Mm.
One of them is that the tools are very different. We didn't have Unity when I was trying to learn to make games.
Right.
We didn't have Blender to the extent that we've got Blender now. I guess one of the things, and this is kind of an emotional thing more than it is a technical thing, but one of the things is that I learned that I'm not really satisfied just making games for money. You know, like, games as a job isn't satisfying to me. I like doing it, and I enjoy doing it, and I... you know, like the skill, but it's not, I don't want to get to 70 years old and have made 2D point and click adventure games as my thing.
Right.
Going to a hole in the ground with that as the obituary, you know. not even thinking
here
about...
Here lies Ben Chandler, he made two... Wait, why would the obituary be an old man?
Well, because you're doing it, apparently. But
are you kidding? Like, you're going to die before me.
I imagine you'll be about 38 when you deliver my obituary.
Oof. Wow.
I.
How bleak.
But I think, when have I not been the one that finds humor in the bleak?
That's true.
I think that I learned that I can make games.
Right.
When I was a kid, we had this exercise in class, and I believe I've told this already, where you had to write down in a letter for yourself that you weren't to open until you were 21 years of age. I don't know how old I was. I imagine I was 10 or thereabouts.
Oh, man, I had to do the same thing, but it wasn't quite that long.
Right, and I think most kids are forced to do that by teachers that want kids to think about their future instead of allowing kids to enjoy their childhood free
of course.
Apprehension of adulthood.
Yes.
And one of the things that they said was, what do you want to do? So that when you read it at the age of 21, I guess you can be reminded of your dreams and maybe pursue those, or just be reminded that you've become a failure in the, you know, pursuit of money. Rather than happiness. And I put down for that I wanted to be a writer for the magazine PC Power Play.
Right.
The reason that I put that down is because I read PC Power Play cover to cover. I read every advertisement. I read every article, every interview. I read about technical stuff that I had no idea about. I was a 9-year-old kid.
Mm.
I didn't know what any of that stuff meant, but I absorbed it all up. Like, it was the greatest thing. It was my holy text. And the idea of writing for that holy publication was the greatest conceivable idea to me ever, because I didn't understand that human beings made computer games.
Mm-hmm.
Especially human beings from a small town. My graduating class from that school that made me write that letter to myself was 4 kids, and I was one of them.
Right.
I came from an extremely small town. Nobody knew anything about computer games. Nobody, that stuff just didn't happen to kids that come from Doodlakan primary school. And the idea of making a computer game was inconceivable, especially because I wasn't like a kid playing, I played Zork and stuff like that, but I didn't want to make Zork, though I did meddle with text adventures when I couldn't draw. I wanted to make Command & Conquer.
Right.
Which was, you know, probably had a budget of millions. And it had, you know, rock and roll music, and it had voice, and it had actual, well, I say actual actors, it had people pretending to be characters shot by a camera. It was this immense production. You know, I was playing Doom and Unreal and Quake, and I was playing games with big budgets. Or, you know, considerable budgets of experience. So the greatest thing that I could ever conceive to do was to write about these games. I couldn't conceive making them.
Mm-hmm.
Having seen what game journalism is like now, and, you know, becoming friends with game journalists and even working on a project with one, I definitely am glad that I did not pursue that career path.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've totally forgotten the question by rambling. Sorry.
It was more or less, what do you feel like you've learned in the past few years that allows you to work in 3D and do what you're doing now that you couldn't have done a few years ago?
Well, a few years ago, specifically 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, I was terrified of failing. I had just started doing this with Dave on like a full-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea how long it would last, and I was terrified of not having this anymore.
Right.
Having this was the most important thing to me, basically.
Hmm.
Because who gets to do this? It's the dream job, right?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I'm not asking this like as a sort of as a rhetorical question. I'm literally saying to you, Francisco Gonzalez, that does this, that yes. This is the dream, right?
Yeah, for me it is.
Right, so that was the dream. I did the best that I could of a specific thing without the thought that, oh, maybe one day I'll do something different.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been working steadily on these games. I've made a lot of adventure games. I made a lot of small ones by myself, and then coming out of making like, you know, the hour long or 30 minute long or 2 hour long games. You know, I did Blackwell Epiphany, I did Techno Babylon, I did Shard Light with you, I did Unavowed. They're big games, they're long. At one point, I couldn't conceive of making a full length adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can obviously conceive of doing it.
Yeah. Right, same.
I believe, I always believed that you could do it because you've been doing it for as long as I can remember. Well, the first game I played of yours was Ben Jordan 6.
Yeah.
And that was a long adventure game.
I guess.
So to me, you've always had that capability. I never doubted that you could do it.
That's the sweetest thing you've ever said to me.
No, it's not. That's a lie.
Yeah, right.
And so to me, that was a challenge that I had yet to overcome.
Uh-huh.
I believe that I can do it now.
Okay.
I don't just believe that I can do it. I know that I can do it. And, like, it's very peculiar to me that I can look at Metacritic and look at Unavowed, despite the fact that I'm not happy with my work on it. I can see the ratings that it's gotten and think, I helped make that come to life.
Right.
That's something to be proud of if ever I allow myself the opportunity to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I have that now. I have that confidence that I can do something that I couldn't before.
Mm-hmm.
And that has given me the courage to try something, knowing that if I fail, which is a possibility, mm-hmm. and I've accepted it as a possibility, I can return to something that I had success in.
Right. Okay. I feel very similarly, but I feel like my particular aspect of that is art, because, I mean, I, like you said, I've been making games a long time. I always had the confidence in myself that I could design and finish a game. As to their quality, that's been a learning process as well. You know, I mean, I've designed some pretty weird games in the early days, and just like some dumb puzzles and stuff like that, and dialogue that was whatever. And I mean, you know, I've been doing it for a while, and so I've sort of accepted that I know I have the work ethic to be able to finish a game, and I have a basic understanding of the structure of games and narrative and stuff to be able to design a game. But yeah, my struggle, my weak point was always art. And, you know, when I was working in freeware stuff, it was fine because I was doing it for free and it didn't really matter. But then, of course, when I went commercial, I was like, okay, well, this is a different ballpark. Like, I know I had that self-imposed stigma of, like, freeware versus commercial quality of art, which was unhelpful, but it was an unfortunate side effect of going commercial. Anyway, over the years, through just studying, admittedly, obviously not as much study as you've done, because, I mean, that's been your focus, whereas I've been focused on everything, basically. But, I mean, through study, and, you know, you've helped me, and other artists have helped me as well, I finally feel like, and I know you teased me recently about, I've been saying, oh, I finally have the hang of this for years. And maybe saying that I finally have the hang of this is the wrong thing to say, but I finally feel comfortable enough or confident enough in myself and my abilities to be able to say, okay, well, I can produce something art-wise that will be acceptable. And I also told you that, like, with Lamplight City, for example, it was my first higher than 320 by 200 resolution game, and I was still using the crutch of painting backgrounds at a higher resolution and then scaling them down to hide my sins, as you put it.
Which we all still do.
Yeah, we all still do to an extent, yeah. So, you know, I was doing that with the backgrounds, but in the years between the release of A Golden Wake and, I mean, obviously, I didn't do any of the art, really. I didn't do any of the art on Shardlight. So I had that time between the release of A Golden Wake and after Shardlight came out, when I started working on Lamplight City, to actually study and practice and get better at the stuff that I was not good at. And so I improved a little bit. You know, I actually learned what the concept of perspective was, which I think made enough of a difference that people, when they saw Lamplight City, they were like, oh, this looks nice. And I actually had a lot of compliments on the art of Lamplight City, which blew my mind, because I was like, I've never expected anyone to like actually be like, oh wow, this really looks good. And I attributed that to the fact that I actually learned some basics and like was actually more or less competent at being able to do stuff. So that leads into this new project where I decided, okay, well, I don't want to do another 640 by 400 game. I'm going to try higher resolution, because I know that, you know, one of my pet peeves is when reviewers or when people comment on how like the low resolution in the pixel art is due to a limitation of the engine. So I was like, okay, well, I know it's possible to make higher resolution games in AGS. I don't want to go crazy and do like, you know, super, super duper crazy high resolution, but I mean, I think doubling it will make sense. So I decided to double the resolution to 1280 by 720 or 720p widescreen. And I was like, well, okay, this is what I want to do. And I think I can do this. I was unsure at first, because I was like, can I make this look consistent? Can I make the sprites and the backgrounds mesh well? Can I draw the backgrounds at a resolution that I can do it in a reasonable amount of time? And can I still rotoscope and have it look good? So there was a bunch of questions I had to ask myself, and so I spent the first few months after Lamplight City came out and even still while I was working on Lamplight City at the end, I just started doing little art tests, and I was like, okay, well, I'll try drawing a background at this resolution. And I did, and I was pretty happy with the results. Actually, I was still doing the scaling thing. And then I tried doing some sprites. I tried doing some little rotoscoping tests. I was very pleased to find that it still worked and still looked good. I adapted my style a little bit so that the sprites were a little easier to animate. And I was like, okay, I think I can do this. And once that all clicked, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And so that's where I'm at right now. And I've thrown away the crutch of doing the painting at double the resolution and scaling down. I'm just painting straight at 1280 by 720. And I feel comfortable doing it. I mean, I still, you know, have that little bit of doubt, but I'm confident enough in the fact that I've drawn so many backgrounds. I know I'm boring you, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Fine.
I know I'm teasing you for sighing. You know I tease you. I can't pat you, so I just have to tease you. So basically that's where I'm at. Because I knew that I wanted to push myself. I knew I wanted to do something else. But I do not feel at all comfortable trying to go into 3D. And so the next logical step for me was to just go to a higher resolution. I don't know if I'll ever feel comfortable enough to go to 3D, but I know that, you know, if I can pull off more or less what I want to do in this game at this resolution, I feel comfortable staying there for at least a little while longer after, rather than having to, you know, push myself and find something else to go, somewhere else to go, basically. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been a really interesting experience, and I'm just having a lot of fun playing around with it so far. And yeah, I'm curious to see what I'll be able to pull off.
Interesting. Yeah, that's quite different to how I feel, but it's cool to hear, you know, obviously, for me, I feel like your natural progression or your gradual evolution of your style has been a fairly consistent thing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
When I couldn't draw, I remember looking at Ben Jordan 6 and being like, oh, I'd love to be able to draw like that.
Right.
So, you know, I studied fairly hard and, you know, eventually was teaching new techniques.
Right.
But it's interesting that you use the word comfortable. And not to sort of sound miserable or anything like that, but when I started drawing for Dave, I was not comfortable. The style that I was drawing Dave's games in was not my style or the style that I chose to draw in.
I think maybe we use the words comfortable and confident interchangeably, at least I do.
Right.
And whereas maybe I think they mean different things to you.
Well, I wasn't confident or comfortable.
Okay.
But I wanted to do it.
Right.
I liked Dave's games and I wanted to work on games with him.
Right.
And I felt like I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I obviously had some idea how to make low resolution backgrounds and characters, but not ones that fit the style of story that he wanted to tell. And, you know, he was like, oh, your characters have big heads and stuff like that. And that's obviously not what his games had.
Right.
So I always felt like I was playing catch up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never really comfortable. Whereas I feel like Dave was quite happy publishing or like working on you with the sort of games, the visual style that you like making,
mm-hmm.
The more realistic proportions, and that sort of stuff. And one of the things I've said to Dave about me learning 3D and, you know, what our first game is going to look like, or does look like, is that the very first game that I worked on for Dave, or that I did art for Dave for, looked like Black Wheel Deception.
Right.
And, you know, I wasn't comfortable. I wasn't confident. I slowly built up my confidence and my comfortability, but it was never like me drawing in what I had defined at that point as my style,
mm-hmm.
and what everybody expected of me in my style.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't feel confident. I didn't feel comfortable. I do not feel confident now. I do not feel comfortable now. But I have already overcome that once.
Mm-hmm.
With success.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see why I can't do it again.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't see why you can't do it again either. And I also think, too, that, I mean, just from seeing people's comments and reactions and stuff, is some people have said, you know, even though it's 3D, it still has that Ben Chandler style. And well, I can't
change which colors I like.
Right, exactly. I can't
change which shapes I like just by changing medium. You can't escape your sins that easily.
No, but I'm saying this is a positive thing. I'm
never going to take anything as positive. You know that.
I know. But I'm saying, like, the difference between you saying, for example, like, you adapting your style from your small freeware games with the characters with the big heads and the glowy eyes and having to put that into, or having to basically learn how to draw more realistic and more human proportions and things like that in 2D, I think was a bigger change than, I mean, yes, you do still have to kind of, you're learning this whole new world of 3D, but you also already have that experience from, excuse me, you already have that experience from 2D, and you've already developed your own style in 2D that you already have some groundwork to play with. You're not going into it completely just like, it's not like you're saying, oh, I'm going into 3D and I also have no artistic background.
Correct.
Because there's lots of people who work in 3D who are not artists. They're 3D modelers, they're 3D renderers, but they're not artists.
Right. And I mean, I never went into working on Dave's game without any idea of what I was doing. I always knew how to... I could, by the time I was, you know, showing stuff to Dave showing stuff to Dave every day in the fairly confident knowledge that one day when he'd be looking for an artist, he'd go, hey, that guy that shows me art literally every single day, makes art literally every single day, I should give him a job.
Right.
I was confident that you could give me something to draw and I could draw it with some level of skill. I remember the very first thing that I did for Dave when I was talking to him about art and stuff like that, I just sort of said to him, hey, look, if you're ever looking for an artist or something, you know, I'd be happy to do something. You know, what's the sort of thing that you'd like to work on? And he told me this idea about a science fiction game. So as quick as I could, because I was trying to prove myself, I drew a spaceship roughly like the one that he quickly described to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I drew one in like Photoshop or GIMP or whatever I was using at the time in like 15 minutes, as quick as I could, basically, without making it look like shit, and showed it to him, and he went, wow, did you really just draw that quickly? Obviously, I'd drawn it that quickly because I wanted him to give me a job. I wasn't like the regular pace that I worked at.
Right.
But yeah, so I didn't go into it without some ability. And the same thing with doing 3D is, you know, I studied 3D in my bedroom after work every night to make sure I could do it before I went, hey, let's commit to a 3D game.
I did a lot of studying in my bedroom after work at night too, but it wasn't 3D, let me tell you.
And so I haven't gone in without any experience. That being said, there have been that many days when I've sat at my desk and things aren't working and I've thought to myself, was all this a mistake?
Mm-hmm. And well, we all have days like that.
I've always said that, but it's never felt this real until this project.
Right.
Which I knew would happen. I'm not stupid. I'm not naive enough to think that you can just, you know, take your success, throw it away completely, or not completely, but, you know, throw it away and think everything's going to be fine and easy and fun. It's obviously difficult. Mm. And I remember when Dave sort of announced that he was making a 3D project next, or producing a 3D project next, I should say, and publishing a 3D project next, he was surprised that people were disappointed.
Mm.
Which interested me because I expected people to be disappointed the whole time. Mm-hmm. And he sort of said, you know, it's people define us. People think that we are defined by the low res graphics, but I've always thought that we're defined by the characters. And as I said to him, and he did agree with me, it is fair for people to choose to define us by that style, but it's also fair for us to attempt to redefine ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to just, you know, empower us to make the sort of games that we want to make more. And I feel like in Unavowed, we were being held back by what we could do with AGS and 2D graphics.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make a cool shooter.
Okay.
So I definitely have confidence that if you said to me, hey, build me an apartment in 3D, here's a week or 2 weeks or whatever to do it, I could make something cool.
Right.
I have not got that confidence for a full game yet.
Okay.
The challenges that we've come up against have been numerous, horrifying, and incredibly stressful.
Mm.
I'm expecting more of that. Mm. It'd be stupid to not expect more of that. I don't look forward to them, but I'm also not stupid enough to think that they won't happen.
Right.
And I'm wondering what other horrors the future holds for us. At the same time, I also think, like, you know, now or never, right?
Yeah, of course. No time like the present and all that.
Yeah.
So
don't anybody take this, like, listening to this and listening to me talk as being like it's impossible. It's definitely possible. And as I've said to Dave, I'm like, the only difference between university kids coming out and making their first 3D game and me making their first 3D game is that they have learned skills in a university that I have not.
Right.
But university kids can do that. So why can't I?
Right.
All I got to do is learn those skills that they learned that I haven't.
Sure. What about Nighthawks? Can you talk a little bit about your experience drawing at 4K?
Nighthawks is weird for me because it was obviously easier
mm-hmm.
than like doing 3D.
Right.
Than like learning 3D. It was, you know, when I was learning 3D, I didn't have the most basic of technical abilities. With Nighthawks, I can like push a brush around and know the hotkeys.
Right.
So I wasn't learning the technical stuff. In terms of like using the tools, it was more learning the technical stuff in terms of making things look good.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been the portraits guy for Where Jedi games, and suddenly I've got to draw portraits.
Right.
And
well, you got to draw full bodies, but yeah.
Well, not full bodies. I don't have to do legs and
well,
feet.
I mean,
and
like
that saves a surprising amount of pain.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the paradigm.
Just ask old Rob Liefeld.
The paradigm's completely different.
Wow, I finally made you chuckle a little bit.
I know. Defining moment of your career. Yeah, Nighthawks is different. I really can't say much about it at this point because we haven't hit the nightmare stage in Nighthawks yet. So when the nightmare stage inevitably comes, I'll discuss it more.
Okay, well, fair enough.
As, not to be a pessimist, but the challenges that Nighthawks have thrown up have been like, oh, this doesn't look like how I want it to look.
Right.
Which is much easier to deal with, like, than, like, why is everything literally broken all the time?
Right. Yeah, I got you.
And, you know, so Nighthawks was also very weird because I'm a pessimist.
We both, no shit!
And I kind of... It's not that I didn't expect it to be...
I mean, I'm also a pessimist, so... But I'm just... I just hide it better than you do.
Right. It wasn't that I expected it to fail on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, like, when it succeeded, I was kind of like, oh, yeah. Oh, right.
I have to make this game now.
Yeah, and not even that. Like, I always knew that I had to make it, but, like, I have to make more of this game. Because we already built a demo for Kickstarter.
Sure.
And it was just, like, a weird thing of, like, you know, oh, you have to do that same thing that you did, but better and on a way bigger scale. So, you know, don't know. But also, Nighthawks isn't a point-and-click adventure game, whereas Technobabylon Birthright is.
Right.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
painting in 4K is like painting in 320 by 200, but you can't use photo textures so easily, and you have takes a lot longer.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I feel.
What is, yeah.
Although I still have managed to be sneaky and use some photo textures.
Oh, Nighthawks is full of photo textures.
Yeah.
Just you gotta work harder.
Exactly.
I hate working.
Yeah, me too, but whatever.
The bottom line is that to go back to Gareth's question, and Gareth?
Yes.
I can't even talk.
Yes. he's not here. He's not going to respond to your calling out to him.
I watched an interview last night. I say interview in the loosest of terms with Ryan Blessed, and it was literally...
Oh, man.
It was the most wonderful thing I've ever seen. And maybe I've been inspired by Brian Blessed because he was not answering the questions at all. He was just ranting wonderfully for an hour. And I feel like I've ranted just pointlessly for an hour.
Yes, but you haven't ranted like Brian Blessed.
No, and I don't intend to talk about Gorilla Cox either.
What?
But in order to return to the
You're going to have to link me to this interview.
In order to return to the original question,
uh-huh.
I have not achieved a fraction of what I hope to achieve.
Okay.
Not even the merest fraction of what I hope to achieve.
Well, good. That's always a good driving force. I don't know what I hope to achieve, but I'm just doing what I like doing and what I'm enjoying doing for now.
And that is wonderful. That is a fantastic thing to be able to say.
Yeah.
I'm very happy for you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I...
But definitely times, I imagine, especially when you were shipping around Lamplight City and failing to find publishers after time and things weren't going well, when you kind of thought, maybe this will end.
Right, yeah.
And that's a terrible thing when you have something that you love and it gets taken away.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what you said before about you were talking about the idea of I forget what exactly it was you were saying, but you were saying something to the effect of, you know, having something and this is all there is sort of thing.
Yes. And you don't want to lose it.
Exactly. I mean, that's kind of what you just said now, but you talked about it before. And yeah, like, that's how I felt a bit, you know, because at that point, I knew, or in just my experience, because I hadn't really gone outside. I was in my comfort zone, and I didn't really go outside my comfort zone in the sense of that my comfort zone was working with Wajidai. And, you know, at that point, I was like, okay, well, Wajidai is the only real active adventure game publisher that I feel that I can work with and suits what I need to do. And so getting that taken away from me was terrifying because I was like, you know, I was like, well, what do I do now? Where do I go? Who's going to be interested in this? Like, there's nobody out there that's interested, which is totally not true, but that's what my doubting mind was telling myself.
Yes.
So yeah, it was a struggle, and it was a lot of work to find someone that was interested in taking a chance on a point-and-click adventure game. And I mean, I consider myself very lucky that I had a reputation and I had stuff that I could show. You know, I can't even begin to imagine the struggle of someone who's trying to pitch their very first game to a publisher. I mean, that's just one of the things you have to overcome and realize that, yeah, like, there is the real possibility that things will stop. I feel like this really went off tangents, off topic, but I'm trying to be as inspirational as possible. There is that feeling of, oh my God, what am I going to do if this gets taken away from me? But the important thing is that you adapt and you try and make the best of the situation and you do your best and you find a way. Life finds a way, as that old trite phrase goes.
Yeah, and I don't want to be like the guy that ends on like a you know, inspirational quote or anything like this, but I'm going to do it because why not? Because I'm never this guy, it's always you. So I guess it's my turn now. Okay. That I find myself in this place where I have the fear of failure every single day that I sit down at my computer. And, you know, literally yesterday I couldn't get the most simplest thing done and I couldn't figure out why. But I overcame it at 8 o'clock at night and succeeded.
Good.
When I was learning to water ski, I was being taught how to water ski by a friend of mine that I was working with in the shearing team at the time. And he had a good sense of humor and he used to make fun of you when you fell off, you know, and I'd injure myself and he'd, you know, you'd make fun of it and like, you know, oh, you're not going to have children and everything like that. But he said to me one day after I'd fallen off, while I was trying something new, I sort of got back on the boat and like, you know, blew the salt water out of my nose and everything like that. And the next person took their turn water skiing and they kept doing, and they were doing it, you know, for a long time. They were succeeding more than I was. And he sort of looked at them and he looked at me and he said, oh, I can see what the problem with him is now. And I said, well, what's he doing wrong? Because I just fell off and he hasn't fallen off. And he said, well, if you're not falling off, then you're not pushing yourself hard enough to try something new. And I think that quote applies in everything in life. And it sucks to fall off the water ski and get the salt water up your nose. But if you never push beyond the point where you're comfortable, you'll never reestablish that comfort zone and you'll be stuck doing the same things on that water ski forever.
That's very good. Now allow me to counterpoint that with a with a little anecdote about how I forgot how the sun worked the other day. Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, I am at Grundislav Games.
I am at Ben_304.
And together we are at BCT _podcast. Very good. All right. Well, that's our episode. I will see you at GDC in a very short amount of time, and we will be back in a few weeks with a episode, a nice little recap of your experience at GDC. So that should be fun. And if anybody else has any questions,
cream pies.
Yes, if good, not too many though.
Have you ever eaten a Little Debbie's zebra cake?
No. Wait, are those the ones that are like the little spirals?
They're striped like a zebra.
No, I've not had those.
They're hexagonal.
Yeah, no, I haven't had those. Okay. I like living. Anyway, if
I
anybody...
I wish I was dead, so
yeah,
I'm
yeah, I know.
That.
I know, it works perfectly. If you have any questions for any topics you'd like to hear, please feel free to DM them to either me or Ben, our Twitters, or our... Okay, fine. Don't slide into Ben's DMs, but you can slide into our DMs.
But also, thank you for today's topic.
Yes, thank you, Gareth, for today's topic. We've obviously had a hard time coming up with our own, which is partly the reason we haven't done a new episode in a while. But anyway, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.